All right, we'll come back to order. And, you ready? Okay. Discussion action, approval of modification to existing business license for the VC Outlaws. It's item number 10.
This is pretty simple. It's just adding another owner on the license.
Okay.
We've gone through the process. Everything's clean. One owner doesn't change the business at all. Just adding a new owner, so we would recommend.
It's as simple as it reads.
Excuse me?
It's as simple as it reads.
Exactly.
Okay. Any discussion? Motion?
Mr. Chairman, it's time to move for approval of item 10. Approval modification to existing license of VC Outlaws.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Let's see, number 12 is resolution 13373 setting salaries, and I believe you have before you the list of those modifications and changes.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I can take this. This is an annual process that we do usually at the last meeting in June. We have done it on exception basis on off cycles as well. I believe we did one shortly after y'all took office for one or two changes. Well, one was the Justice of the Peace on oversight. These essentially set the salary grade ranges for all non-represented employees. It also accomplishes or acknowledges the NRS statutes for the pay for the assessor, the commissioners, the clerk treasurer, the district attorney, the reporter, and the sheriff. And then in addition to that, there is one elected office along with the other non-representative, and that is the Justice of the Peace that you do have discretionary authority to set. From the original resolution that was provided in your packet, there have been two notable changes, and that is, after discussing it with the sheriff, there is no anticipated need for the court bailiff, nor any anticipated need for the position of lieutenant. So we deleted those as not needed. The only change from the existing resolution is we have taken out a multitude of positions that we no longer use, and the only grade adjustment was actually a competitive adjustment for the IT director. So hopefully, if we don't make a lot of changes in the next year, the next one we shall see will be the last meeting in June of 2014.
Very good.
And I suppose I probably should read portions of the resolution into the record. A resolution setting salaries of elected county officers and employees fixed by ordinance or resolution per NRS 245.043 for elected officials and NRS 245.045 for appointed officials. And the rest of it is textual that we have provided.
Okay.
That effective July 1st, 2013.
I want to congratulate the both of you for still remaining the three of us as still the lowest paid employees in the county. All right. Any questions or comments on that? Mark, come on up.
Mark Joseph Phillips, Virginia City resident. June 18, 2003, this is a discussion before action. Item number 12, approving the resolution 13-373, setting salaries. Commissioners, my concern today, and it's just that a concern, and I'll just say it and go from there, but statute requires certain appointed officers to file statements of financial disclosure within a certain amount of days after they're appointed to their positions. And there's three public officers that I believe should be filing statements of financial disclosure. I know that Austin Osborne took Ms. Tischler's job, who was filing financial statements for years. Also, I believe our emergency management director would be required to file. And also, Mr. Hesse, in his new job, his job is defined in statute, and I believe he should have filed his state.
What's this?
Okay.
Thank you. Okay, anything else? Janet?
Thank you. My name is Janet Houts. In the budget meetings, the final and tentative budgets meetings that we had in the last month, you mentioned that tourism is not part of county. It is a separate entity. My question now to y'all, to the commissioners, I'm big loss. I hope that you can educate me on that basis. Why is the tourism and community services directors, as well as tourism and marketing managers in these resolutions, if it is a separate entity itself, then why is it in the Story County resolution? Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I can answer that. That's a simple answer.
Even though the BCTC is a separate local government, we've been working with taxation with that repeatedly. Their employees under one or more attorney general opinions are considered employees of Story County. The BCTC pays portions of the salary for the tourism and community services director and pays 100% of the salary and benefits for the tourism marketing manager, but they are still under AGO opinion considered employees of the county. And you set those salaries, not the BCTC.
You could ask the same question of the fire chief position.
Good point.
All right. Any other questions on it? Come on up here.
No, I'm just asking, can you just repeat the statement just now?
You
didn't hear what you said.
We didn't hear what you said.
Oh, I said you could ask the same question of the fire chief's position. That's a separate local government also.
All right. Mr. Chairman, move for approval of item 12, resolution 13-373, setting salaries.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All righty. Got that. Okay, we'll recess and reconvene as the NRS 473 Fire Board. Item number 14 is approval of resolution 13374 for the dissolution of the NDF Fire Protection District. Any discussions or comments on this?
Mr. Chairman, I'll lead off. Again, I want to recognize Mike out in the audience and ask Mike to please send a strong message back to everybody in forestry. This is really what we have been asking to do for several years, and it was your team's hard work together with the regional fire chiefs and our lobbyists that helped make this happen. We are actually able to, under the new Wildland Fire Protection Program and managing our own seasonals, as we have done since the beginning of this in cooperation with NDF, we already are in position, no offense to NDF, but to provide more locally controlled services and use them, including prison crews for emergencies. But also, in the end run, after we absorb some startup costs, we should be able to save money at the same time and provide more flexible schedules, particularly for folks down in Mark Twain, that give us better station coverage. So I want to thank Clear Up through Leo, but definitely Pete and the whole team, Mike, that, you know, have listened to us and lobbied with us to help make this happen. This is a great program, and we're excited for July 1st to kick off.
Yeah, I will mirror the county manager's comments on that. It's been a long time coming, and glad to see it, and certainly our lobbyists went to bat for us on this one also, and I want to thank all of them, so. Do you have something, Janet?
Thank you. I read resolutions, but I just want to reconfirm with the commissioner. As you stated, as 473 is going to resolve, my question now is that under the fire protections, are we going to have an ordinance of rulings on only basically based for 474 code, or is there still 473 code that we need to apply under fire protection? Getting back to the questions that you were asking about the salaries, fire protections itself is managed by the commissioners, right? Tourism does not, as what it was indicated earlier in the budget meeting. So now I'm very, very confused, because under the Department of Taxation, even you have mentioned it, stressed out very clearly that is not, the tourism is not under the commissioner management. So if it is not under the commissioner management, then why are you all setting up the salaries? That's all I'm asking. And there is a sales tax, sorry, property tax that we have under the NDF. It might have, my question might affect on the 474 code. We have on a property tax, there is a rate percentage of 0.11% on the property tax. Isn't it that is for the NDF that is a wildfire? So is this going to basically transfer to the 474 or what? And what happened to all the fire departments? Because I do not know what type of, they have a number of plans of a budgeted departments that relate to the 473 and 474, if I'm not mistaken. I can't remember which one now. So my question is that are they going to combine later and transfer back to the fire funds, or are they going to still as stipulated as the same? Thank you.
Okay, you may not want to leave because I'm going to try to answer as many as I can, but I may have to have you refresh me on a couple. First off, it is not the County Board of Commissioners that oversee our NRS 474 fire district. That's why you see us recessing to convene as a fire, as a 474 or a 473 fire board. It gets confusing sometimes because in certain counties, you have a choice when you have a 474 fire board, and you had a choice, past tense, under 473, which is now effective July 1st, an obsolete dinosaur, but okay. I'll get back to that.
Okay.
Under 474, you can, when you form, you can opt to go through an election process. For instance, in Central Lyon County, Central Lyon County has a completely different board of fire commissioners for their various fire districts, all of them, Gary, or at least for Central Lyon, all of our Central Lyon that I'm familiar with. They have multiple fire districts where we only have one 474. So in Central Lyon, the fire board of commissioners for Central Lyon 474 fire district is a completely different group of people. But under NRS 474, you can also opt to have your county commissioners serve as that board.
Yes,
but they are not the county commissioners when they are there. They are the NRS 474 fire board.
Okay.
So that is why Commissioner Chevanian has appropriately likened the BCTC to the NRS 474 fire district. In the eyes of taxation, they are completely separate local governments, much the same as the Canyon GID is or the Story County School District. So I hope I've answered that one. The 473 fire district you mentioned is really obsolete as of July 1st with the Wildland Fire Protection Program. Am I correct, Chief? Or Mike? We don't need all those services, and NDF through DCNR does not wish to go ahead and structure themselves that way. They're reinventing themselves through passage of this budget and great planning. We will have the protections that we need under our annual premium under the Wildland Fire Protection Program, I believe $150,000 of our budget,
will provide us the protective services that we need, while we will handle staffing, initial attack, management oversight, you know, all those things that we have. And the last one, Janet, I wrote down is there is an incremental property tax right now. I'm not in a position to confirm the rate that you mentioned. That is listed.
But this is the old one. I'm just looking at the old one.
That is listed for Forest Street. That fund name changes effective July 1st and goes into our Wildland Fire Protection Group. Okay? So the tax doesn't change. It just funds individually that Wildland Fire Protection Group. It doesn't go back into the 474 district. This whole operation, although there are some shared agreements between the 474 district and the county as far as management oversight, station cohabitations, all those types of things, but the tax won't change. The name changes to help fund the Wildland Fire Protection Program.
Okay, so if I'm going to refer on the ruling of the fire department, I just basically have to use 474 as NRS 474 as a guideline. So it is 473 is deleted, am I right?
As of July 1st. That's correct.
Okay. Thank you for explaining out. Now, as you say that this is separate board meeting itself, why is it there's no public comment on this fire board?
Because you can comment on any agenda item during the item.
But you mean to say you don't have to necessarily give to the public as a public comment for this board meeting?
Both boards, the County Board of Commissioners, actually the Water and Sewer Board that will be convening here shortly, and the 473 fire boards routinely allow comments on agenda items.
On the agenda item, but your agenda does not have a public comment because this is a separate meeting. That's not part of the commissioner meeting. This is a separate meeting by itself. Why is it not going to have a public comment on that basis?
I'll defer to legal.
Because this under the NRS ruling, Mark, can you help me to recall? I think it's 2-4. So every meeting on the public should have a public comments, either beginning or ending, or you have in between on that basis. Thank you.
Well, I'm not sure I want to pass this now. I'm so confused.
Especially since we have it on here twice, because there was a little bit of confusion over whether or not the 473 group should disband itself in the county, so you're going to do it twice.
It's my recollection that we already passed this a couple meetings ago, and that we're just following up since the legislation has gone through.
That's right. We want to make absolutely sure the governor signed the budget.
Right, but we've already passed this once. We'll pass it again today. Right.
Is there any other confusion that anyone wants?
Well, and you really haven't passed the resolution. We've just budgeted that way, presented it that way. We wanted to hold off on the resolution until the budget was a done deal and NDF was ready to go.
Send out on the WPP.
Yeah. So, all right, I'll entertain a motion.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, move for approval of item 14, approval of resolution 13-374 for the dissolution of NRS NDF Fire Protection District.
I'll second the motion.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, we'll adjourn. As the 473 board and reconvene as Story County Board of Commissioners, item number 16, approval of resolution 13-374 for the dissolution of the NRS district.
And on the advice of council, we opted to have both the 473 district and the county commission.
Yep. So there's no other further discussion, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, move for approval of item 16. Approve of resolution 13-374, again.
Second motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. 17, approval of resolution 13-376, augment the NRS 474 district fund. Any?
Well, while Hugh's making his way up, I will briefly mention that augmentations, particularly within isolated funds like Chief Haim has, with a 474 district, you know, are a routine matter. This year we were pretty much able to minimize most of the augmentations because of flexibilities within the funds. But the chief operates, as you know, a great wildland fire protection program of his own with the dozer operations. And those out-of-district assignments frequently create large fluctuations that trigger these types of augmentations. So I'll leave it up to you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, the augmentation for this year out of the 474 fire fund is in the amount of $384,566. This is partly as a result of a what we now call mutual aid program, which is in another special revenue fund that we have created July 1st of this year. Previously, we were putting it into the fire emergency fund because we needed a distinction what was being paid and what was coming in from those instances outside the county. As we did that, we had to then, because the fire emergency fund is only in case of emergencies, we then had to journalize all of that back into Gary's fund, which made everything of his budgeted items pretty much at a much greater increase than normal. And so this augmentation will take care of some of that. We will not have this problem next year because the mutual aid fund will be its own fund, so that any expenditures and any revenue received from assignments outside this county will go specifically to the mutual aid fund, which is another special revenue fund. So for your approval, I would approve the $384,566, which is higher than we anticipated, to go against salaries and wages, services and supplies, and capital outlay, as you have on your resolution.
Very good. Questions, comments? Janet?
Stick around, Mark.
I know that fire funds, we have not have really have how is the performance of the fire on the expenses. Yeah, I have, as a public, I have not seen anything on that. I try to find out what is the status of the financial or performance of the fire departments. I have not seen anything. Now, will this, can I or can the public know what are these expenses in more like a summary, like if you have a traveling, and then there's a total figure. We don't need a very detailed, just a category by itself and a full amount. What are the components that make up of these figures? Is there a place that we can find just to check it out on that basis? Because we would like to know. And then another thing is the salary basis. Here is stated as you have allocated that, I can't remember how much enough. So it's about 53,000 goes to salaries and wages. Now, my question is that I was a bit lost because we paid, under Story County Fire Department paid the salary and wages to the employees. Now we have this extra money, okay? We have this extra money on that, so we have to expand it out. I understand that. But we already paid the salaries and wages to the employee. Now we're taking this to pay another time? Or is this a backfill that is related? Thank you.
As I previously explained, these revenue figures, the increase in this revenue goes towards salaries in the amount of $67,000 that were used for fires outside this county and that were billed for separately outside this county. So there's an increase in the revenues from
those fires that were done outside this county that the fire chief had to absorb now within his fire district. We are now taking revenues that were probably anticipated higher than we thought because of those charges. We are now going to give, now we are going to budget those items which were not previously budgeted for in his original budget because we did not know what the outside of the county fires were, and we are not going to anticipate that because they're a separate incident outside this county. So now we have done this for his wages, his supplies, his capital outlay, and as I explained before, this will not be the case next year because we now have a special revenue fund for all those expenditures and income for all of those fires outside this county.
You ask, this is, as you say, you are sending out to people, you are sending the employees to out town to get the revenues, and this is the billing on that basis, and so you get extra revenue on that basis. My question is this, your employee, if you did not go send out the employee to out for doing the servicing, fighting the services, you still pay them the salary. Okay, now we are sending them out. Is that $67,000 that you're referring to is included or an increase in the existing employees that you're going to pay? So example, a simple example. If I'm paid $50 for it, now I'm going out of town, am I going to get $75? Is this $25 that you consider as $67,000 is the additional payment of my $25? Thank you.
It's going to be the overtime for that individual because he's leaving this district and he's going to fight 14, 17, how many ever days on a fire. Okay. It's also the callback for those people that have to now take his position on the operational side of the county's fire district. Okay, so those two factors are plus their benefits are what's in that number.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments? Would someone care to make a motion?
Are we number 17,
Mr. Chairman? That's correct. You know
where the hell I am. Move for approval of resolution 13-376, the augmentation of the fire district budget.
All right. I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Item number 18, acceptance of fuel debt.
Mr. Chairman, I'll take this one because we have a young lady in the back of the room that is a little shy and chooses to say, come on, eat a microcap, step up.
Well, that's why you've been hanging out, playing hooky from your office all day.
First off, I want to recognize Jennifer because she just does phenomenal work. And putting together bids that were on an annual basis is no simple task, especially when she's dealing with Mike and I, you know, and all the vendors. So I think we threw 10 curveballs at her and she hit every one of them out of the park. I've got great news. We do go out to bid periodically. We were historically on a two-year bid cycle, and for reasons I determined last year, we opted to go on a one-year bid. You know, it probably worked against us. So this year we corrected that and went out for a three-year bid. And we bid for both the county and on behalf of the school district if they choose to want to participate. We include their tanks in their locations. Except the school district gets all its fuel from, not its propane, but its diesel fuels from NDOT still, I believe. We bid regular unleaded, mid-grade unleaded, and also diesel. And we opened bids last Thursday at 10 a.m. And present included Jennifer, Mike, our comptroller Hugh, myself, and then there were representatives from two of the bidding companies there as well when we publicly opened the bids. We're currently providing all of those, both grades of unleaded and diesel, through a company by the name of Flyers. We pay based on locations right now about 11 and a quarter cents over essentially wholesale cost. They call it different things. They've got OPIT and rack and everything, but over wholesale cost, the spread to transport it up here, deliver it, and whatever profit these companies, you know, try to make are 11 and a quarter cents with a few changes. They charge a little bit more for Mark Twain and a little bit less for the Highlands on mid-grade diesel. Anyway, there were five responsive bids, and the high was Allied Washoe. These spreadsheets are part of the public record. Allied Washoe, for instance, here in Story County, delivered to Virginia City, was going to be 45 cents spread versus the 11 and a quarter that I mentioned before. Golden Gate Petroleum was down to 29 cents spread, and they varied depending on where they were delivering to based on their yards. Interstate Oil, who has served us in the past, was in at about the 22, 24, and 25 cent range, depending on location and type of fuel. Flyers was in at around 12 and a quarter cents, so it would have been a slight increase in what they were currently providing. And Carson Valley Oil stepped up to the plate and bid 8 cents a gallon on every location with the exception of Lockwood. So that gave us a dilemma, is we got to have gas out in Lockwood. So we called Flyers, who was the second low bid, and asked if they would like to have just the Lockwood business. And their bid out there was 12 and a quarter cents, which is up a single penny over their current rates. So we'd be asking in a moment that you award the fuel bids for unleaded, regular, unleaded mid-grade, and diesel to Carson Valley Oil at 8 cents spread, with the exception of service to Lockwood, which will be a 12 and a quarter cent spread. And I think since propane is a completely different animal, I'd ask for that in a motion, and then we'll all review propane with you as well.
Okay, any comments or questions on fuel costs? Yeah, come on up. Sorry, the bidding is closed if you were going to try to underbid.
No, this is a very simple question. Very simple. Maybe I would, maybe the commissioners can able to help the residents for these fuels and propane on that basis. I think we have to, Marshall, Commissioner Marshall has talked, we talked about it in some time, I think it was in February or January, about fuel, about the propane, whether the county can able to help the residents to seek a better rate.
Can you hold on for just a minute, because the motion, and I'm not a parliamentarian, but I specifically split fuel from propane because
okay.
Propane is separate. So it's a great question. Have a seat. I might be able to answer it in just a minute, but we're doing just the fuel now. We can't help you there on gas or diesel.
Maybe okay? We can.
So. Because we were a local government with tax exemptions. That's why.
Okay. I'll take a motion then for the fuel bids and for vehicles.
Mr. Chairman, move to accept the Flyers bid to provide service to Lockwood for both gasolines and their diesel fuel, and to award Carson Valley Oil to all of the other districts for all three fuels as well.
I second motion.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay, thank you. Continuing on, I'd like to go over the propane bids because I think this will answer Janet's question. We're currently paying Ferrellgas at a spread of 24 cents over what they call rack rate and sparks, and it goes by a number of different names. Again, this is the county and the school district. There are $0 tank rentals and zero fees for hazmat fuel charges, surcharges. Our employees last year, even though it was not a bid spec, received a guaranteed rate of 50 cents over rack rate. And Ferrellgas definitely explained the difference in pricing with our own employees directly to me and said, well, when we fill a county tank or a school district tank and we bill you, we know you're going to pay. We have higher risk when we deal with any other group that isn't, you know, essentially a guaranteed payer. So you can tell that Ferrellgas currently, through the end of this month, spread another 26 cents because of the collections and also a number of things. I mean, our tanks here at the courthouse, I don't know, Mike, if you can help me out, but they're probably 500 to 1,000 to 2,000 gallon tanks, and the individual houses have much smaller services. I mean, those are 150, 200 gallon tanks in many requests. So they've got to go to 10 houses to match one of our tanks here at the courthouse. So there's a number of factors that went into Farrell's justification, but they were able to do that. This year, Commissioner McBride's prompting, and again, for those of you that think when you speak and the county government may not hear you, specifically our county commissioners, believe me, Commissioner McBride did, and the other commissioners as well, and when Commissioner McBride speaks, I listen, but he asked to see if we could do a bid alt for the residents of the county. So, and I'll tell you that we had essentially, for logistical reasons, a very limited non-responsive bid from Comstock Propane. They have a difficult time meeting the number of tanks that we have while they're still working to get started up, but they're a good company. I want to point out that AmeriGas and Bi-State are in some type of merger that I'm not able to speak to, but they're acquiring each other and changing names and doing everything. So we really only have three bids, and Comstock being essentially non-responsive or non-competitive. Comstock, by the way, on a limited number of tanks in VC that were owned by the county or the school district, bid at a spread of 54 cents over rack rate. AmeriGas bid at 24 cents over rack rate. They were responsive bid with zero tank rentals, zero hazmat, and then they bid an employee rate of 58 cents over rack plus freight and a resident rate at 90 cents plus freight. And keep in mind, again, our current price from the county is 24 cents. Ferrellgas, our existing provider, their bid, we're recommending you award, is 19 cents for the county and the district tanks, $0 on tank rental, $0 on fees, hazmat, and fuel surcharges. The employee rate stayed the same at 50 cents, and the resident rate is at 75 cents. So I would encourage anybody, once the commission awards this, to give a call to Ferrellgas. The gentleman we work with is named Jay Reed, but I talk to anybody that answers after we let him know he hopefully got the bid. And I think I've covered everything I can. So I want to thank Commissioner McBride for prompting us to get a residential rate bid. I will say this, and I think people like Pat know this pretty well, having sometimes these rates, these companies can fluctuate rates themselves easily. So, you know, I would caution everybody that whether they're employees at 50 cents over rack or residents at 75 cents over rack, sometimes that may be a very good rate, other times it may not be the best rate out in the market. So,
can I ask a question? Will you be putting a notification to all the residents so that at least they are aware? Some of them are not aware. And I know that some of them does not have an internet, but they use on the newspaper. Will the county publish for the residents on these offers that we really appreciate? Thank you, Mark.
We'll work on a press release and local papers. Okay.
Thank you.
Pat.
Pat Flanagan, resident in the Highlands. I don't understand, and maybe you can enlighten me, that rack rate changes a lot. How are you able to know that they're fulfilling the commitment of the premium over the rack rate? I can't figure out how to do that.
Jennifer, once a week or once a...
He does send you an email. How often does that happen?
It's not very regular. It could sometimes in the winter, it's every week. This time of year, it'll drop drastically and then kind of stay steady.
Okay, thank you very much.
With the fuel, I get a smell every day with a lot of fuel.
And then that information is given to the county. That information is public record. So we can provide that to you through Jennifer's office.
Can I ask him?
Sure.
To me, I've got 1,400 customers.
Yep.
You know, that's almost as big as the county.
That's probably bigger.
Then motion?
You bet. So back to number 18 once again, Mr. Chairman. Move for approval to accept the propane bid from Feral Gas. And I believe manager has indicated this is a 3-year contract.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, we're recessed to reconvene as the Story County Water and Sewer Board. Item number 20, approval of the resolution 13379, providing for increases in water and sewer rates. And Mike has got those.
Again, Jennifer's being shy back there, so she sent me this way. But anyway, I'll give you just a brief overview. This is an annual occurrence that occurs at the second meeting in June, and this is setting of the annual rates for the Virginia City, for the Story County water and sewer system. Rates that are charged for service in Virginia City, Gold Hill, and Silver City. Just a little background, and basically the only rate today that is changing is the increase for water and sewer, both residential and commercial, and on the sewer side as well. And in 2010, the county utilized our engineer of record, Far West Engineering, to do a rate analysis for operational expenses compared to revenues for water and sewer plant operations. And we found through the analysis that was pretty competitive because we used the local market, if you will, you know, right around us and what they were charging. And because our rates hadn't been increased in 12 years, I believe it was. Was it 12, Ken? Yeah, 12 years, we were really lacking behind. Well, instead of hitting everybody all at once with a 20-plus dollar a month increase, we just, the Board of Commissioners at that time decided to spread it out over a 5-year period for water and a 3-year period for sewer. So hopefully this will be the last increase in an operational rate on the sewer, and then two more on the fire. The residential base rate, the increase is 411 for water. On the commercial side, it's 590 for sewer. It's 402 for residential and 709 for commercial. And
I just want to not necessarily clarify one thing, but restate one thing. Mike was specific in saying this should be the last year of operational increases for the sewer, but the bottom line is there will be more increases for sewer.
On the sewer, on the debt service.
You know, on the programs that we're running. So this gets us up to a break-even point on sewer. With two more years to go on water, we felt like we could spread water out a little bit more and needed to accelerate sewer because of the age of the system and the condition.
Yep. And if anybody's got any complaints about the cost of the water, give you a name you can call. Harry Reed. So, any other comments on that?
I appreciate it.
you want me to say?
Janet's got an idea.
Thank you. I didn't review all, but I saw a few. I saw the water. I see that there is an increase for residents about 17% from the previous. That means I think it's $4 something. Is it $4 something? I can't remember. 17% for residential and 15.6% increase on the water itself. So I didn't check on the sewage anyway, but just to keep you all informed on that basis. But, my questions, because there is also instead, I have, it's indicated that in the late payment, which is the interest rate of 4% per month. Now, this is the things I'm a bit curious, very, very curious. We have put a survey as on the income basis, I think was before we applied the grant. And we tried to get a grant for that basis, and it stated as if you can give us a low income by the, I think majority of the residents has a low income. Now, how can a low income, I know you are rich, I'm poor anyway, but that's why I'm appealing for it,
yeah,
for on that basis, because I know you're well paid. My question is that, if you have 4% in 1 month, 1 year is 48%. Yes, 48%. IRS does not even apply that. IRS is only applied, I believe it's only 5.5% for one whole year. Are your considers, commissioner considers, having thought of how the residents feel to pay this, especially these low income or the seniors have a fixed income? Can they really afford to pay if they suddenly they are short of money and they can't pay, but they have to defer it maybe a month or 2 months to catch up with the expenses? Now, when they have that payment, late payment, you're going to be fined for $60, this connection fees, or if you did not pay, settle within 1 month, then you have to pay $1,200 for connection fees. I'm just lost. Maybe I'm wrong. Perhaps you can educate me on that basis.
Well, and you know, keep in mind that these rates are not, you know, spread out throughout Story County. This is for the enterprise funds, water and sewer, for those customers that are serviced by our systems in Virginia City, Gold Hill, and Silver City. As far as the other rates that you mentioned, you know, historically, they were there when I took over as Public Works Director, have never changed. She mentioned the rate of the $1,200, and that's not for a month. That's if a water service is just abandoned, if you will, and you know, a year later somebody comes in and wants to reestablish that service, they're going to pay that reconnect fee of the $1,200. And I didn't, you know, understand all of Janice's questions. I'm sorry, but if you'd like, you can visit with us in the office, and we'd be happy to go over it with you.
And I want to say that we fought this thing tooth and nail many, many years ago when Harry pushed the Rural Clean Water Act through, and we had perfectly good water and ended up having to put in the water plant. So, again, it's something that was forced on us from Washington, D.C.
Another unfunded mandate.
And a good portion of it was unfunded mandate. So,
and the other thing about operating these plants is these plants, as you know, on the sewer side, especially that plant's 30 years old, that's why it needs to be replaced. But we see the same aging issues in the water treatment side. You know, just this last year, for example, we spent you know, upwards of $90,000 to replace all of the automated valve actuators because they were causing headaches, problems, and, you know, they're 16, 17 years old. You can't get parts for them, so, you know, we decided to bite the bullet and change them all out at once to get a better price of doing it piecemeal, if you will. But it, you know, there's a lot involved in operation of both water and sewer plants behind the scenes that people never see, you know.
Mike offers tours. Anyone's in. All right, well, let's get into a motion here to what we want to do on this.
Move to approve item 20, the approval of resolution 13-379, the increase in water and sewer rates.
A second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. So we'll recess and reconvene as the Story County Board of Commissioners. Item 22 is renew, extend, or allow to expire the lease on the Gold Hill Depot. I have an email from Mr. Kim Fagert requesting that this item be continued. Request is denied. You want
to? Yeah, let me kick off if I can, Kim. If you want to
kick off,
since we haven't had a chance to talk. The Gold Hill Historic Society has leased the county-owned property known as the Gold Hill Depot for, based on information provided by Kim, we couldn't necessarily find the original lease, but for 20 years. We typically have renewed that lease without issue in five-year periods, the last time being in August of 2008. Yeah. and Kim has requested your consideration of longer leases so that it can help with fundraising. As you're probably aware, I provided you some significant documentation, and I'm sure Kim won't, you know, be very happy with this and won't sit well, but it's my personal opinion, having worked with this for the last 5 years, almost immediately after the last lease renewal in August of 2008, we started running into a multitude of issues up there. We had grading issues with the Nevada Commission for the reconstruction of the V&T Railroad. We had some purported, although never really proven, unfortunate incidents where there may have been unkindly gestures toward passengers on trains. And I can certainly attest to almost an untenable relationship with the short line owner, Tom Gray, and the V&T, and also the long line operator, Tom Gray, and the V&T. I attended one meeting down at the depot to try to address some mutual concerns of both Tom's and the Gold Hill Hotel, and it did not go well at all. So that causes me to the county, again, we lease several properties. We've got the Fourth Ward School that we lease out to the foundation. We've got the Fire Museum that we lease out to Liberty Engine. We've got St. Mary's Arts Center. And really, I don't experience that with any of our county-owned properties. It's just difficult for me. And in the course of looking at the lease, I turned both to Tom Gray, who couldn't be here, but also to Dwight Millard, who's the chair of the Nevada Commission for the Reconstruction of the Virginia and Truckee Railroad, and also Candy Duncan, and I'm going to blow your job now as a marketing guru for that whole thing. They said, what's the highest and best use? And ironically, both the Rail Commission, and you have a letter to that extent that I provided today by Dwight, and also Tom has said, you know, we'd really like to work with the county to integrate this into our mutual operations. And my proposal is we're at a point where we could renew. We could renew for another 5 years, or as Kim has asked, for 10 or 30 or anything in between. My recommendation to you, as you've seen in the staff report, is not to renew. My recommendation is we'll provide notice. I think over the course of, you know, the next 6 months or so, We need to do exploratory talks with the various people with vested interests, the Gold Hill Historic Society as well. Conceptually, either go out to bid or go out for, you know, an RFQ that basically says, what would you like to do? I've had people opine, and I agree totally, that, you know, if we're going to lease this property, which, again, some of the visible improvements seem to have waned over the last several years, particularly if you're pacing it with, say, a Fourth Ward school or St. Mary's Arts Center, perhaps a lease can be more benchmark-based in the future. But staff's recommendation to you is to not renew the lease. We would extend it only until August 30th of this year, and then we ask that the Historic Society vacate it, and we'll assess future options down the road. So, and Mr. Millard is here, as is Candace, and I know that Mr. Fager will have feedback on that.
Mr. Fager?
I'll be referring to some of this information. I need to make sure that this part of it.
Okay, well.
Kim Fager, Gold Hill Historical Society.
I'm going to start out reading a letter from Mr. Stephen Drew. He's a former curator of the California State Railroad Museum. This letter is dated 2011.
Just a moment, remind you that you have 3 minutes. I'll probably give you a tad more than that, but
I'll do the best I can, sir. This is in reference to an event that we put on in 2010. It benefited the Virginia and Truckee Railroad Historical Society. It's an organization that isn't just local. It covers basically membership in all of the United States and some foreign countries. From Mr. Stephen Drew. You beat me to an email reply. A personal thank you to you and your Gold Hill Historical Society cohorts for rolling out the red carpet and giving VNTRR History Conference attendees a rare behind-the-scenes look at significant restoration in progress. I trust you realize you were amidst a most appreciative audience. Your opening presentation and openness to Q&A were spot on. You are articulate and capably stand and deliver. You are very eloquently make the case for what you did and why you did what you did. You are an excellent spokesman for your organization. Hats off, congratulations, and our renewed thanks. The Sunday field trip to Gold Hill was a highlight of our conference, and we've already booked the Gold Dust West for the same weekend next year. It was also a pleasure working with you on our little booklet. I hope you like the way it comes out. Skipping down. Again, our profound thanks. It was a great pleasure to work with you on the booklet and the field trip. The interest of our members in the Gold Hill Depot is only increasing. We'll look for excuses to work together again in the future. Kindest personal regards, Stephen. What that refers to is one of the many things that we try to do to promote the Virginia and Truckee Railroad. This is a pamphlet that was put together by Mr. Drew in collaboration with myself that basically outlines the history and, you know, the import of the building to the area. It has a perfect picture of what the place looked like when we first got there. And further on, it outlines the work we've done as far as planning to try to improve the building.
It outlines the stuff that we've done as far as things like putting a new roof on it, putting a new foundation under it, getting the fire sprinkler system installed, some $300,000 worth of work. And it indicates the progress that we've made even on the interior, where you can see refurbished walls and other, you know, things. We found the place in just terrifically terrible condition after a good 60 years of neglect by Story County, and to some extent, you know, a little bit of help from some intervening operations. We've stuck with the project since the early 80s. And at this point, we're literally on the verge of having it usable for the public. One thing that I've learned to realize is if you take a pig in a poke like that, that nobody wants, and you adopt it, and after a whole lot of labor and experience and support from different people in the community, it starts bearing some pretty attractive fruit. Suddenly, you get a lot of attraction from a lot of other different people with different agendas. I'm very much entertained that at this point, Story County doesn't seem to think that the effort that we put into this thing really is worth allowing us to just get over the last little hurdle and finish the building. We agree and have always intended to have the building preserved historically and as accurately as possible and used for a railroad station and community center. I don't believe that varies one bit from what other people's proposals are. With the time limit that I've been placed on this, which surprises me, because usually when something comes up before the county commission, like projects or stuff like that, you basically have time to review the whole thing. I'm kind of feeling that I'm more in the position of just a local commenter rather than the person who's supposed to be responsible for this project. I'm entertained to see that a little bit of pressure would push my 25 years of effort into this, as well as not just me, but all of the supporters I've had over those years, all of the people in our group that worked on it, all of the people who've donated to it, and even the state of Nevada's support that we've garnered for it, aside for convenience. I've been very disappointed over the last 10 years that we've had a poor working relationship with the current manager of the Virginia Truckee Railroad. I think that's a personal problem. I don't understand it at all. I'm just the victim of it, and I don't think this is the proper venue to discuss that. So if you take that out of the picture and you go back to what we've accomplished, I think we've done the county well. When we first took the building over, it was worth about maybe firewood. Now it's worth well over $350,000. I don't think that's a bad investment, considering my time in it was free. I've never made a dime on it.
Well, let's why don't we let you take a break, and we'll hear some other public comment, and we'll give you some more time as we proceed in this. Let's get some other folks up here. Thank you. Anyone else wish to make some comments on this at all, on this matter? Judy, come on up. I have some comments, too, that I'll make, but I'll let Judy go ahead here.
This is Judy Collins, Silverstone, Story County resident, business owner. I am not aware of anything about the railroad. I didn't know anything about this. So my question is, what changes? What's important to Virginia City as a town that everybody loves the railroad? I've ridden it. I rode it last summer. I thought, wow, the building is really good. Mm-hmm. I had no idea of the ownership. So how does this affect the railroad, the short line? How does it affect the tourist? Does it still go through? Because the building looks really nice. I saw it, looked at it 10 years ago, and then I looked at it last summer. So I don't know if anyone else here really understands what's going on, because I really don't. It's renewing the lease for someone that apparently put all the money into it, time and effort, and now they don't want to lease it. So if you could explain that, if you don't want to explain it to me, but it just let us understand what we're really doing here, because I don't understand it.
Okay, I'll take a stab at that, Judy. And I wish the rail commission's operator and the owner of the BMT were here to address it, but he has provided a letter. And I think if you would factor some of the supporting documents that were provided as underlying my recommendation, I think a different approach to the Gold Hill Depot than what we have currently seen in the last at least 5 years, let's say, would enhance both the rail operations, both long line and short line. There's ways that we're in discussions with Mr. Gray to try to extend decking, if you will, to tie that in. Right now, Tom's operation, actually both operations, drive directly past the track. If you're on the short line, it ends, I think, probably about 500 yards further down in an area that now, again, based on the documentation, is kind of difficult, really, for people to even get down to the Gold Hill area and the hotel. So the nexus of this, to answer your question point blank, is the animosities that Mr. Fager has referred to and that, again, are at least indicated in portions of this that you've seen, you know, are really almost going to make that difficult at best. We can take a fresh approach to a lease. We can set benchmarks that require things. This is, I think in Bill Maddox's terms, this is a lousy lease. You know, it has really no milestones, no benchmarks, no anything that would govern performance on a county building. And that's what we're saying here right now is we're, my recommendation anyway, not we, excuse me, is not to rush to redo this lease, but to look and assess all of our options over the next 3 to 6 months, not a magic number or anything, see what Kim wants to bring back to the table, but also see what others such as the Rail Commission, Tom Gray, Jim Clark, a plethora of others may or may not want to bring in terms of revitalizing it and making it be the treasure that it can be. So I hope I've answered.
I'll add a few comments to that, and these are my personal observations over about the last year, more or less. I was at one, I sit on the BNT Rail Commission also, and one of the meetings, Mr. Fegert went on under public comment for some 40-odd minutes, berating Mr. Gray. He insulted every one of us that sits on the Rail Commission. It was, in my opinion, an inexcusable act. And then just a few months ago at another commission meeting, he went into another title and again insulted all of us has some problem with Mr. Gray, and Mr. Gray is the operator of the railroad, both the short line and the long line, and we can no longer continue to operate this railroad in this manner. We have the time has come to move along. We have other plans for that depot, and the Rail Commission has some good ideas. I'm sure that our tourism folks have got some ideas also, and so I think my own personal opinion is that it's time to move along. And the one thing that really bothers me is the fact that members of the Gold Hill Historic Society have stood down there at the Gold Hill Depot next to the trains as they go by, making obscene gestures to passengers on the train. That, to me, is inexcusable. That is six-year-old behavior. They're taking it out, whatever this animosity is towards Mr. Gray. They're directing it at people who have no concept of what's going on. And that, to me, and the comments made during over an hour of public comment by Mr. Fagert, was just pretty much did it for me. I've had it. I'm not taking away anything from the work you've done on the depot. I think you've done an excellent job. But your actions over the last year are inexcusable. They are not consistent with what any of us in the county or at the state level are trying to accomplish. Your negative attitude and your animosity towards Mr. Gray and the State Railroad Commission is just not going to work. So, in my opinion, I want you out of there and out of the picture. And those are my comments. Is there any other comment from the audience?
Mr. Chairman, I'm just going to chime in real briefly. And again, I'm not going to accuse Kim of uttering false statements. But the fact that we're just turning the corner and we're going to be open soon, I did provide you in your packet and part of the public record some remarks that Kim wrote and I guess delivered to the Nevada Commission for the Reconstruction of the BNT Railway on October 5th, 2009. And at that stage, he indicated there were plans to be open for business in the summer of 2010. So here we are now approaching, I think, on Thursday or Friday, the summer of 2013, and we're still almost ready. So I think it is a combination that has led me to make this recommendation to you of just not making the progress that I think we ought to be. I realize grant funding is difficult and problematic. It is for all of us. But we need to step back and reassess this and take a fresh approach.
I would totally concur. Any comments from or questions from the commission?
Well, I'd have a personal observation. I believe the railroad, the BNT, the expansion, the opportunity for tourism, the entire project for Story County, Virginia City is a critical one. I think it's very, very important, and I can tell you that our personal group, myself, have sent funds approaching $15,000 into the BNT Railroad Fund. And so if you put your money where your mouth is, I will tell you that we are committed to excellence and professionalism and the operation. And some of this information is very new to me at this point, candidly. I haven't been hands-on with the rail, but from a business standpoint, I absolutely support a professional operation and a successful operation. And I believe that one of the outcomes that I've heard, that or at least appealing to me, is to step back, reevaluate, and certainly requests for proposals from a variety of individuals would be in keeping with a bidding process, and we're only limited by our imagination, so let's take a look at it. And certainly I should think Kim, with the experience he's had there in the background, would be certainly qualified to submit to the board and the community his vision and his plans for the next step. And so I would take the position that although we perhaps at this point should not renew the lease, we ought to take a fresh look, and we ought to consider him a qualified entity to resubmit to the community. And may the best man win, but let's look at the opportunities. And that's where I would stand in this issue.
I was going to ask if you're going to let Kim rebut your comments.
I will.
And I'm going to make a motion on this, but I'll wait till Kim has done his rebuttal.
You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. Right.
I'm not lazy. I'm just leaning down so you can hear me. I'd heard comments that people in our organization, going back 2 years, had been making offensive gestures. At that time, I addressed that. I discussed it with everybody involved with our project, and I said, is there any possible truth to this? Because it would be insane for us to, shall we say, act in such a childish manner for whatever reason. I leave that to other people. I will say, with no qualification whatever, that nobody in our organization has ever done any such thing. And to that end, I have previously put out a reward of $250 to anybody that can provide credible evidence or credible testimony the other way. Now, it doesn't include V&T Railroad employees that have an agenda. I'm talking about passengers, passersby, anything. That's not something that I would put up with. And that's not something that I've ever been aware of, and that's not something I don't know of anybody that could verify. But I'm entertained to see that if enough people start throwing at it to the wall and nobody rebuts it, it sticks. I think out of anything else, I didn't expect to come here and be offended myself by that kind of commentary. I'll let it go. As far as my relationship with Mr. Gray, the letter I just read you was from, as I said, Stephen Drew. Stephen Drew is not only the former curator of the California State Railroad Museum, but he's the chairman of the board of the Virginia and Truckee Railroad. I have another letter here, going back some 10 years, from Bob Gray, who I was an employee of for 20 years, that supports our position. It's a copy of that's in your packets. Now, as soon as that letter was released, Tom went out and basically tried to bury it. And he tried to claim that it was a forgery. In fact, I have witnesses that saw Mr. Gray sign that letter of support for us. We harbor no ill will to the Virginia Truckee Railroad at all whatsoever. We harbor no ill will to the Railroad Commission at all whatsoever. Any comments that I make at Railroad Commission meetings are strictly out of our concern for the way the operation is run, and we have a perfect right not only as a stakeholder in this operation, but as citizens to try to get everybody to understand that we believe there are problems there that need to be corrected. If anybody took offense at my comments, I regret that. I think that's just, as you gentlemen well know, part of being a public official. I didn't make any rude or crude comments. I just pointed out things that I could document as far as the operation of the Railroad Commission that were the truth. As far as things that I deal with from Mr. Gray, he recently tried to put us out of business by insisting that we were operating things in our railroad yard in an unsafe manner. That culminated in the Public Utilities Commission and the Federal Railroad Administration both coming up and investigating and exonerating us completely. Mr. Gray at that time tried to get the Public Service Commission to give him authority over our little yard. Along with the Federal Railroad Commission or Administration, they agreed that he had no right to do so and that we were doing nothing that would possibly be any problem or issue. We further went to add an extra safety measure to our yard whenever we do operate something, which is like once a year. I'm very much entertained to see the direction this goes, because we generally do everything we can to support both the Railroad Commission operation, for instance, through the Retrack project, where we got $500,000 worth of material donated to the first phase of this, through other things like we're currently researching tourism possibilities for Gold Hill and looking at plans to try to develop the upper end around the depot. There's just a myriad of things. not only just work on the building itself, but other things that we do that try to benefit the county. I read the letter that Mr. Gray submitted to the county. I was entertained with some of the errors in it, and I'm not certain I will be able to appropriately address them with the time I have. I guess that's up to the commission. But I think one thing that you might detect from me is a frustration. Once again, like I explained before, when we took that place on, I have pictures hanging in the waiting room of the deplorable state of that building back in like 1983. I can testify that it was nearly ready to fall down. It's a fine structure now. We are also aware of the fact that quite a bit of my funding came from the state of Nevada through the Cultural Affairs Commission, for which, of course, by the way, I've signed covenants that make me responsible to keep it up. And we do. We're constantly making improvements to the place. Currently, one of our projects is restoring the baggage dock behind the building, where you don't see it, but the train does, because that was an original part of the building. And that lies in line with our effort to try to restore it to exactly the way it was.
Kim, I think you're kind of drifting off here a little bit on, I don't think there's any argument about what you've done. The work is exemplary, and that's not what we're here to discuss. So I think I'm going to cut you off here at the seven-minute point. Is there any other comment from anyone?
Mr. Chairman, and I anticipated Kim's rebuttal of those obscene gestures, because those were actually attempted to be addressed back in August of, I believe, 2009. But I do want to point out that, you know, at least one, what I would call credible complaint, was lodged back in August 2009 by Edward Shropshire. And he wrote to Tom. Tom provided it to me, indicating that his son, who did not live in the area, was visiting. He's a rail fan. And he saw the locomotive at the Gold Hill Depot, stopped, got out, and asked three men standing there if he could take some pictures. One of them, who apparently was an engineer, sarcastically asked him if he could read the no trespassing signs, and that he could take pictures from the county road over there. For a town that depends on tourism, rude treatment of visitors should not be tolerated. All he did was ask for permission to be on the depot grounds to take a picture.
I replied to that, and I have a copy of the letter that I wrote you about that.
Okay.
I don't recall that one. Sorry.
I have it here.
There being no other comment, I'll entertain a motion then.
Okay. Well, there's no doubt about the work you've done down there, and that building was in disrepair. But based on the correspondence I've read, the testimony I've heard here today, my personal conversations with members of the Railroad Commission, I'm going to move that we let the lease expire. I think it was recommended by staff to August the 30th. Is that correct? And at that point, we can go ahead and entertain where maybe put some new eyes on this, where we what we want to go in the future with the depot.
I would second the motion with the understanding that Kim is absolutely welcome to make a new presentation to the board under a new lease or a new operation, and I think we should take into consideration all of the fine things that you have accomplished, and if there are some personality issues existing, perhaps those could be resolved before. But
we've indicated all through this that we're willing to work with everybody.
Certainly, I would encourage you and invite you to come in the process, and as we revisit what we'll do with the people.
Thank you.
All right, I have a motion and I have a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. So what I would say to you then is that prior to August 30th, you remove whatever personal items you have out of there.
That will be expensive.
Personal item.
We'll have to hire a friend with the locomotive.
All right, please don't interrupt me.
Sorry, sir.
Remove your personal items like hand tools and things like that. Any large expensive items, we'll, of course, provide Mr. Dotson, who will be the caretaker of that building here, with some documentation, since we don't know what belongs to Story County, what belongs to Gold Hill Historic Society, what belongs to you privately, any expensive large things would need to be in, on some sort of an inventory list where there is a track record, and I say that because if there were donations made and someone comes back at a later time and says, I donated a couple of widgets worth $10,000 a piece, and I donated them to the Gold Hill Depot or and or Story County, where are they? So we need to be cautious of that. So provide Mr. Dotson with keys, and good luck. Thank you. Okay, next item. Community development, item number 23. Second reading of Ordinance 13-248.
Good afternoon, Board. Robert Morris for the record. I realize it's getting pretty late, but if you'll give me a few minutes, I'll try and explain what this ordinance does. This is the time for the public hearing on an ordinance amending Story County Code Chapter 1520, Flood Damage Protection. I should start out by saying that I've made two changes to the text between the first ordinance at the first reading and today's ordinance. One of them is inserting the flood damage protection name into the title. The other one is the penalty in 15.20.110. I'm working on another ordinance that is trying to fix all the penalty sections, and that required me to change the penalty section in here. And I think it's an improvement from the one that was here before. This ordinance started out by Shannon Gardner, who's the floodplain administrator. He made a couple of changes to definitions and was requiring maintenance for anything that was in a floodplain. He asked if I would take a look at this, and I did, and decided that there were enough other changes that it was worthwhile redoing the ordinance. I've had Shannon look at it again. I've also gotten a response from Kim Davis at the state, who reviewed the ordinance as far as the changes that had been made. If I could just briefly talk about the changes she talked about. One thing was that I didn't put the whole ordinance or the existing chapter 1520. Only the sections that were changed are in here. So there's quite a few pages of sections that were not changed that are not included in here. And that's a typical way to do the legislature. Otherwise, you'd end up with big wads of paper that are really not necessary. The other thing she asked about was the general severability clause that I removed. Now, most legislation contains that, and in Story County has that same practice of, for every ordinance, there's a severability clause, which just basically says if there's a bad part to this ordinance, that's the only bad part. Mm-hmm. Well, in the code itself, there's a section 1.01100, which is a severability clause for the whole code. So there's no requirement that you actually do this individually every time you do an ordinance. And that's one of the things that I'm hoping that I'm helping with the code here, and that's one of the reasons I'm doing the general penalty section, is to try to have a general section that takes care of it and not have to repeat it every time you do an ordinance. So I did take out the general severability section because we do already have one in the code itself. She asked about changing section 1520.270, and if I can recall that correctly, it just sets the minimum height for mobile homes, I believe, is what it is. So let me look. It's on page 22 if you're really interested. if you look down about six or eight lines, all manufactured homes must be elevated on a permanent foundation. And it used to read the lowest floor, and now it's that the bottom of the structural frame or the lowest point of the manufactured home will be elevated above the base flood. So it was a technical thing that she wanted to be put in here. I think it's we've done that, so it looks fine. There are a couple of other sections that I think sort of are indicative of most of the changes that are made in this code. The old section said that there is a Board of Appeals, but it never mentioned who it was. So I put in that the county Board of County Commissioners is the Board of Appeals for flood issues. There are some other things there were that had sort of general language, which I changed to match what is going on here locally. There's, I thought that the way that the procedure for map reviews for what are called map amendments, they had it that the board was supposed to approve the map amendment before it was sent to FEMA. And really what's required is that the floodplain administrator approve it before it's sent to FEMA. I also put in the requirement that anybody submitting a map amendment had to do so with all the appropriate FEMA forms. It would be appropriately done so that the county would then submit it after its review. I think that's a much better way than the way it was set up before. And I think it will streamline, even though there aren't very many, I think it would streamline the process for any that happen. There's also sections about enforcement that were spread through the whole chapter. I've consolidated them into a single a group of them. There's also sections on variances to the requirements of this ordinance, which were again spread through the chapter, and I've again consolidated them together in a area where it's much easier to read instead of having to go through three different sections. Now they're all together. The final change is there's there are two basic ways that this ordinance tries to control flood damage. One is to keep any damage to property. The other one is to keep you from adversely affecting people up and down the floodplain from you. FEMA has a general requirement that you do not go more than 1 foot on other people's property. After talking with Shannon about this and from experience in other jurisdictions, we decided we would put half a foot. So instead of being able to flood your neighbor's property up to a foot, it's now limited to half a foot. And I think it's a reasonable proposition if, and I think that Mr. Gardner thought it was a good and appropriate thing, and so I did put it into the ordinance, and I just want to make sure that you're aware of that. Those are the main changes, and so unless there's some questions or public comment, I'd ask you to go ahead and pass it.
So long story short, this proves itself, right?
Yes.
Gunter?
If you may change it between the first and second reading, can we vote on it?
Hello, my name is Dr. Foster, Story County resident, River District. I just have a question for you. Is this in regards to the meeting we had for the river change on May 16th?
No, this is separate.
Okay. Can you make some changes here between the first and second?
So this, excuse me, this one affects the river?
No.
Okay. Thank you.
And just to, again, reiterate, what this does is it protects people from development in floodplains from affecting their property. So as far as the Truckee River, this doesn't really have an effect on it. Unless you were to build in that area, there would be restrictions put on.
So if we have residents there already, this is not just one step closer to getting that river project further moved further forward?
I don't think.
No.
Were you even at that meeting, Bob?
I was, yes.
No, I wasn't.
Oh.
Yeah, Bob was.
Okay. So anyway, I just thought this.
We're going to make you rise your house up at 6:30.
And this has been in the works for three months. So they are disassociated. It'd be great if we could pass state law, because the protections that Bob is having put in here, while we can enforce that in Story County, that your neighbor can't do something to detrimentally impact your property any more than 6 inches, we'd love to be able to make that law that Washoe County couldn't, or Reno Sparks, but we can't right
now. Okay. Anyway, I just thought it was kind of a coincidence that we're talking about this now, and not knowing everything that was involved. Anyway, thought I'd just bring it up.
Appreciate it.
Very good.
Janet?
I didn't have the chance to read that ordinance, but since you mentioned about the flood zone and the manufactured home, my question is, my area is also under a flood zone area. Will it be affecting the existing owners' housing? No. Okay, thank you.
Okay, going once, going twice, going to a motion.
Mr. Chairman, at this time, item number 23, move to accept the second reading of ordinance 13-248.
I'll second the motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
All righty. Okay. Okay, item 24, licensing. Chairman, Commissioners, thanks, Bob. We recommend that I'll start with a continued, that items B, E, F, G, H, I, J, and K, and I'll read them just to make sure for the record, Virginia City Mining Company, Nevada Distribution Services, Schwab North America, Mars Pet Care, Virginia City Kettle Corn, Hot Pot, American Arms Delta, Battleborne Munitions Incorporated are continued. Motion.
So, once more, B is continued, E is continued, F is continued, I is continued, and K is continued.
And G, Mars Pet Care, H,
G,
yes.
Mars?
Uh-huh. H, Virginia City Kettle Corn Depot. And I don't know if you said J, American Arms Delta.
So the only three that are going to be approved are A, C, and D?
That's correct. There's just continued inspections and those sorts of things going on.
Would that help out?
Got it.
Okay. At this time, Mr. Chairman, move for approval of A, C, and D. All others to be continued.
Second motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thanks, Austin.
Thank you.
Have a comment?
Have a public comment?
Yeah, wake him up.
Yeah. Oh, time's up. Board comment? We're just playing with you, Mark.
Darren?
Go ahead.
You want to play games?
Rock and roll, baby.
To catch up.
What do you got for us? Come on.
Okay, here we are.
Hippity hop.
It's a little after 5. It's 18th of June, 2013, agenda item number 25. And, people ask me about this public comment being moved from the beginning to the end, and I remember years ago, by golly, the public comment used to be at the end of the movie. So I went back to the clerk's office and I found out how many months went by before I noticed they moved public comment from one side to the other. And I assured people that public comment at the end is perfectly legal. And a lot of times, it gives a person a chance to comment.
We're
on something.
We're just checking to see if you're paying attention.
Set the meeting.
And I was waiting. I've waited all day now for somebody to bring it up and say, hey, you guys moved public comment to the end of the agenda.
And I guess it does prevent a person from just standing up, throwing something out there and leaving.
It serves several purposes today. Got rid of Dale Beach right off the get-go. And the other thing is, we've been timing it, and Lance even commented earlier, but I'll take the blame for doing this. Reading up about 20 minutes, half an hour, sometimes more, on public comment, and we've got high-paid state employees and whatever, and we're waiting to get them up to the podium, and so it just made sense to leave the comment open on the agendized items and then move the general comments all the way to the end, and that's the way a lot of the other agendas have it. So,
well, okay, my point here would be the budget analysis for the Story County Department of Taxation. It's the first time I was able to open that bag and lay it all out and make my case. And it was a very courteous and
very good.
My point would be, in regards to
when
no monthly treasures report on the table for May. Okay, we're going to get into the end of the fiscal year. Y'all going to publish some kind of, what is it? It's,
I promise you, Mark, as soon as we...
Wait a minute, Bill.
The sheriff's going to arrest us all for not doing the financial report, so we're going to go out of here in handcuffs.
I will make a written request to the director of the Department of Taxation for an advisory opinion. And I'll get my response back in 2 months whether not putting the treasurer's report on the table before you start publishing.
Well, thank you very much.
Wow. Y'all going to publish information and no way to confirm it.
All right, Mark, thank you. Commissioner comments.
Wait, is Janet?
Oh, Janet's got some comments.
I don't know.
Moving along. Paying attention to detail here. Janet, go right ahead. Jump up there. Shove him out of the way.
Thank you.
Thank you.
What's that old song, Ramblin' Man?
Well, I just want to ask, just give my comment, two comments, I believe it's three. One is that you ask the residents to respect you all, to respect the commissioners. But have you all respect us? When we ask questions, because we had questions that was not clear, we need some clarification. But when we ask your question, you say you are sabotaging you all. So in this case, you are not respecting our questions at all. Second thing is that, as you were just saying, Chairman Commissioner, you are saying that you want to put the public comments at the last because to avoid Mr. Delbridge comment. He has the right too. So as you, everyone has the right to talk. This is called U.S. independence, okay. Democratic, right? The DA has advised, told me a few times, we have to respect. I agree, yes, we have to respect. But do you all respect us? First of all, respect is always earned. I never say anything much. It's always earned.
No, you're fine.
You know? It's not. In your view, you say it's fine. In my view, it's not. So it's a different opinion. Second thing is that when the agenda come in, Mr. Delbridge wanted to talk about it, to move the agenda, to discuss about the agendas. You ignored. I saw the two commissioners was waiting for you to say anything, but you dismissed them and guided, asking to dismiss the meeting from that basis. So is that the right as the commissioners? Perhaps the DA can explain to us, to me, on that basis. What are the responsibility of the commissioners, the rights? And I do understand that these agendas now seems to be putting on Thursday afternoon. The package is on Friday afternoon.
You know the website was down.
I can address that after her 3 minutes is up.
Okay. My question is this. When the agenda is put on Friday for a package to review, you are not allowing the residents or the people to review it or thoroughly check and put questions on that basis. So you only have Monday to put up questions or to get information from the county. By the time when we put up questions, we did not get back any answers at all, because the meeting is next day itself. And sometimes we don't even get the answer at all. So when we put up a question in the meeting, you all disagree. So I do not know what's going on, because last time was on Tuesday, you put the agenda, Wednesday you already had the package itself already for the people to review and to put up questions. Thank you.
Let me address the last one.
Let's go with the last one.
The timing of the agenda package.
And again, I would certainly look to legal counsel to confirm this, but as a practitioner of the open meeting law, the requirement is that when we make information available to the county commission, it's also made available to the public. So first off, I can assure you, when you're seeing the agenda occasionally on Thursday mornings, that's when the commission is seeing it as well. When you're seeing the packet on Friday at noon or whatever, and we strive to do it earlier, they're seeing it as well. So they have exactly the same time to get those answers to the questions as you do. And I would maintain that it's compliant with the open meeting law as long as we post the agenda by 9 o'clock, 3 days prior to the day of the meeting, 3 business days. So ergo, the Thursday morning at 9 a.m. is compliant.
And again, I will tell you, the commission are not seeing any attachments or support documents either. And oftentimes, the agenda is posted first because we are still assembling the packet information. In this case, the major document that we strove to do, after Mr. Phillips mentioned this at the last meeting appropriately, was the lengthy delay in about a 10 or 11 or 12 hour meeting, the April 2nd tentative budget. That was a killer for Vanessa and her team to go ahead and basically be able to rebuild every utterance practically that was said, or at least capture the essence.
Mark, that's here to say.
Mark.
First one to ask for that meeting.
My comment was not critical of you, Mr. Phillips. My comment was complimentary.
And Mark, you don't make comments out of the gallery.
Okay.
There's the door.
Anyway, Janet, you know, to answer your question on the timing, we have a meeting on Monday at noon with our legal counsel where we set the agenda tentatively. Vanessa then strives from that point forward. Actually, it's at 2 o'clock. Excuse me, I misspoke, or 1:30.
Something like that.
Vanessa then strives to get the agenda posted first as quickly as we possibly can. And keep in mind, our deadline for anybody to submit items for consideration on the agenda is at noon on that very same Monday. So we still have some work that we're doing on it, and the agenda packet this time around was later than any of us wanted to see it, especially these three gentlemen up here that also need to digest that information and ask those same questions. So.
Can we add one question?
As I understand for the NRS rulings on the meeting, usually is that it's a 5 business days, unless, as in clauses under the NRS ruling, you have an emergency, then you have 3 days, business days.
I disagree based on my knowledge, and I would say give me the NRS site and Vanessa and I.
That is what I have been reading on that basis. Okay? So I'm just saying on that.
All right. Commissioner, comments?
I have nothing.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Did you have your hand up?
My name is Gunther Prosser, public comments. And so is it my understanding that the public comments from now on will be at the end of the meeting, or is it just for this one?
Okay.
So then under notice, you'll put bullet point number 4 where it says public comments will be allowed at the beginning of each meeting. So you're going to strike that off in the bullet points.
We'll fix it.
Yeah, okay. Because that's just something I want to make you aware of if you're going to plan on doing that at the end of the meeting. And then one other point I'd like to make is I would like to second Mary Lee Miller's concerns about the park, because I heard some of the commissioners saying that it is looking good and looking better. Well, and it is. I grant you, it really is. And everything that's been done to this point is appreciated. I know we have some new programs that we're looking at for making it better. But in my opinion, and in Mary Lou's opinion, it's about 20% of the way better. We've got a long way to go on that part, okay? And there's things that we can get together, and we will. But again, I appreciate the things that are being done because the kids are enjoying the heck out of it.
No question that I know that at least 3 of 4 parks all need work. So.
Right, absolutely. Again, and I know. But it's just that when it's being said that it's looking better, yes, it is looking better, but I just want to state it has a long way to go. And
the burned out areas now, that's, you know, occurred since.
That situation is a sprinkler system. They're using up to 500,000 gallons of water a month, and it doesn't look like it's supposed to when you use that amount of water. It just doesn't. But again, I wanted to make that comment, and again, thank you for for doing this. That's been done.
Before you get a board comment, before Gunther leaves, I think too the next step after we added again, I can't recall the exact amount, which Mike Bevan was here, but I think we added in roughly $7,000 between tentative and final budget to hire this less than part-time person that can unlock the gates, maintain in between, pick up garbage, and I think just those eyes on the ground out there will.
And just to sweep the basketball court off and things like that. But my big thing is I do go to the school board meetings. I hear what the superintendent has to say there, and then I listen to what you folks say here. And there is a conflict of interest between who is supposed to be doing what, because at the school board meeting down in Hillside, the superintendent says, I don't care if if you came up with that agreement or not, but I am not, we don't have the money in our budget to maintain that park, and we will not be maintaining that park. And then I come here, and I hear your side of the story. So I think there's a conflict of who's taking care of what. We're making progress. I appreciate it, but we have still have a long way to go. Because the community garden, the grant that was extended by a year last December, is going to run out in 5 months, and it has nothing has been done down there. So
we'll put $25,000 into
16.
Highlands Park, and the next morning, I think there was vandalism and graffiti. And,
well, between our Rainbow Bend right. security, our sheriff, our school district, which is right next door, and the CGIB being right there, I think we could, if we all would just come together, all we right. could work well. Something out. Okay? That's just
thanks, my comments.
Comments. Thank you very much. Appreciate
all right. Commissioner's comments.
Nothing. I have nothing. No.
Me, nothing.
Right before you end, I'd like to thank Bob Morris for all the
yeah, Bob is,
work he does in the trenches. And then he got placed at the very end of this meeting. And
we're done.
When it's all said and done.
Hey, Gunther, don't run off yet.
Thank you.